Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, and today we're talking about it was a eulogy for the Phoenix Suns, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Pelicans, and the rest of the series are still going. So we are partway through the first round, and I wanted to talk about the teams that have been knocked out, but, you know, just kind of overall touch on each of this series because, you know, it's playoff time. That's a fun thing to do. Before we get into it, I went to Alcatraz this weekend, and I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, Alcatraz is the prison on the island in the Bay of San Francisco. And I'm gonna be honest, I had kind of tempered expectations where I was like, you know, big tourist thing, you take a boat there, you walk around, you take a boat back. Expectations very, very low, which I think is probably good to just in general. You don't want your expectations to be too high. Then everything disappoints you. But I go over there, take the ferry, and I walked around the island. It's very, very cool. I don't know if anyone ever played the Call of Duty zombie maps that was based off Alcatraz. They did a really good job. It actually, I was like, oh, I feel like I've been here before because I played that map like a million times. But super cool. They have an audio tour, and it's like it feels like a new age podcast where there's sound effects, things like that. There was like real Hollywood actors doing the voice work. It was really, really good walking around, seeing the tiny cells and, you know, like the mini guns on the wall. It was very cool. But basically, long story short, if you ever get a chance to go to Alcatraz, definitely do it because it was a very cool, blew me away. It was very fun. And it was only like, 4 hours. It was pretty short because the island's really not that big. But let's talk playoff basketball. So speaking of being on Alcatraz, being in the Dorcher chamber, that's where Brandon Ingram found himself in the series. And so if anyone's wondering, that was a professional, what is that? Professional segue. I was in the radio industry for a long time, but Lou Dort had an unbelievable series. Pelicans really struggled. Oklahoma City sweeps them 4-0. If you're an Oklahoma City fan, you are riding high right now because last year, very exciting. This year, they come in with all the expectations. They have a fantastic year. They get the one seed. They sweep like a solid Pelicans team. I know I've talked down the Pelicans this year because I don't know how well they can really optimize in the playoffs. But just in terms of like overall talent, there's a fair amount of talent on the roster. And yeah, you can, if you're a Pelicans fan, you can be frustrated and you can, you know, nitpick and say, hey, there's some issues here, some issues there. Do we need to make some trades? Obviously, Zion was hurt. There's a lot that goes into this. But if you're a Thunder fan, this is going very, very well. Obviously, 4-0 sweep feels good against anybody. But to get a playoff win with a very young team over a solid crop of talent where, you know, end of the day, CJ McCollum's on the team. You know, he's like a B-minus, C-plus player. Brandon Ingram's on the team. He's a B-level player. Herb Jones is a B-minus player. Valanciunas is a C-plus level player. Like, there's some legit NBA talent on this roster. So if you're the Thunder, you feel really good about that. And then on the plus side, you're going to play the Clippers, or the winner of the Clippers-Mavericks series. That's tied at 2-2. So you're going to be rested, and then either the Clippers or the Mavericks are going to be in a pretty long series. I think that's pretty, you know, bodes well moving forward in the playoffs. The other side of the Western playoff scenario, I guess, is getting all the attention because there's all the star power there. So the Timberwolves just whooped the Suns 4-0, swept them. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, the big three this year, did not really go as planned the entire year. Obviously, Beal missed a lot of time. They had roster construction issues. They were trying to play Bol Bol, who might have ADHD because that guy's got time blindness. He doesn't ever know when the shot clock's expiring. They were playing Bol Bol. I think that really goes to show you what kind of situation they were in. And there's been a ton of talk of, you know, the owner. And this is just what you do when you're in the media. You're like on TV. You go after the owner. You know, they say they made all these moves and they didn't work out and yada, yada, yada. And if you look back at them objectively at the time, I was like, ooh, that's a pretty high price to pay for Kevin Durant. Very good player, but he's 35. He's older. Still very good. That one, I get it. You kind of have to overpay for a generational talent like that. The Bradley Beal move, did it make sense? No. But you had Chris Paul on the roster who looked like he was pretty much out of gas. and you didn't really give anything up. It was Chris Paul. I think maybe like it was like pick swaps, second round picks, maybe another player for salary for Bradley Beal. So you absorbed the massive Bradley Beal contract, but you didn't really give anything up for it. So yeah, does it put you in sort of a tough position salary cap wise to have Booker, Durant, and Beal all in the books? Yes. Bradley Beal also has a no trade clause, which further complicates things. But the situation before, I don't know if this team's really – like Chris Paul does not have much left in him. I think you saw that this year on Golden State. Like he basically can't score, and he does provide value as a passer, which I think would have made sense on this team maybe a little bit more in terms of skill set, but that he can't score at all is an issue. He's also very, very old, so there was health concern issues. I think he like missed time with like a nerve injury this year or something crazy. So looking back – you can nitpick the moves. I think you went into this season with a fair amount of talent on the roster. Bradley Beal's had quite a few injuries. He's had a back injury. I'm not sure how much juice he has. On top of that, that you have three guys that kind of do the same thing isn't great. I've talked about this, being able to like spread out your talent. We look at the Bucks from a few years ago. They won a championship. Their three best players are a big, a forward, and a guard, all having different skill sets. That was really ideal roster construction. You look at the Denver Nuggets now, your best player is your center, your second best player is your point guard. You have a wing that can shoot it just about as good as anybody else in the league, and Michael Porter Jr. And then you have Aaron Gordon, who is, like they always talk about having a movable chess piece in football on defense. That's what I think of Gordon as. He can fill in on any given night being your wing stopper, rebounder, he can score both on and off ball. Like he can do a little bit of everything. So that team's built in a really, really optimized way. He can play big as a four, and then if you needed him, he could even play like the three. So you have a lot of flexibility with that team. So roster construction really, really big. And the Suns, I don't know if it has to be all doom and gloom. I would be interested in trying to run it back and adding some ball handling to the roster. And I would want to see where you could go with this. Because again, you're running out of time because Durant's getting older, but you're already this invested. So I don't know how you'd really get out. I mean, you can trade Booker and Durant. Like that's very possible. But I would be interested in trying to reshuffle the cards, see if you can get some interested maybe veteran players to join the team, because like there is a chance here that you reshuffle some pieces and the Suns team could be a little bit better this year. So this happens when you first put together a team with a lot of big salaries. It's very unoptimized, and then as the years go on, you can sort of tinker with it. Think of the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Miami Heat. Like as the years went on, they were able to tinker with it and find some players whose skill set kind of locked in better. And some of it's just understanding what you need, right? And we could have told you, hey, you're probably gonna need some more ball handling, you're gonna need some people to set up these scores, but you're gonna find smaller things where you can find a forward that can pass or can offensive rebound, or like a Jared Vanderbilt type player, I think would make a lot of sense on this roster, someone whose value comes completely from not scoring the ball, I think would be really, really valuable on this team. So there's a lot of different ways you can go with it. But point being, it did not go well in this playoffs. I think the worst part was just sort of the lack of, this is going to sound so buzzwordy, you know, lack of fight or fire or whatever it is. But it did not seem like there was a lot of people there on the same page, or a lot of people that were happy to be there. So those are never good things. But like I said, I don't think you have to blow it up. And I don't even really know, I was going to say, I don't know how you would, but you, like ideally you'd want to trade Beal, but he has a no trade clause. So that makes it much harder. And I don't think you want to, like if you're the Phoenix franchise, like you have to think this as a business as well as trying to win. If you can have Devin Booker in a Suns uniform for his entire career, that's going to do a lot for fostering goodwill with the fan base and just kind of from a business sense, from a marketing standpoint. So I don't think you want to trade a franchise player in Devin Booker. So I think next year, I think a really smart offseason, and yes, you are sort of hamstrung in terms of your salary. You also gave a pretty big extension to Grayson Allen this year, who again kind of plays the same position as Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. So again, not great, but I would be interested to see what this team could do with just a few different role players, because this team did not feel optimized in any way. So there's a lot to be gained potentially in an offseason where you reshuffle the cards and kind of change up the roster. Let's talk about the Lakers Nuggets. Man, Jamal Murray in my nightmares. Oh my goodness. The shot making out of that guy. I think in my midseason rankings, I was like, he's one of the few players that can go Super Saiyan 3. I stand by that. That's basically how I feel about him still. And again, this team is just really, really good. I tweeted it out too, where it was like the team with a much better net rating is crushing the team with a much worse net rating, where I know there's the Lakers aspect of it, there's the LeBron aspect of it, but the Nuggets team just simply was a lot better. I actually thought the Lakers performed decently well in this series. Yeah, D'Angelo Russell had some really tough games. Austin Reeves started out slow. We finished the series pretty strong. Rui Hachimura didn't have a big impactful series that you kind of be hoping for. Last year was very, very good in the playoffs. So it was tough because the Lakers just didn't get a ton from their kind of secondary pieces. Anthony Davis had a very, very good series, but when the Nuggets have Jokic, Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, and Michael Porter Jr., that those four players on top of having a KCP, it's just really difficult. That's a lot of talent that, again, makes a lot of sense together, that has been together, that won last year. I think the Nuggets are going back to the finals. I think they're going to take care of business against the Timberwolves in the next round, and then either the winner of the Thunder or whoever else is in that series. I think they're destined to play in another finals. I think they probably get another ring, but the Lakers series was interesting because it felt like the Lakers had pretty good first halves. A lot of times they went in with a lead, and then that counterpunch, that end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, that's where the money's made. And we saw it so much with the Golden State Warrior teams where just the tsunami would come, and it was such a signature by them where all of a sudden Steph and Klay would get hot. You look up and it was just like they score 15 points in just a few minutes. I feel like the Nuggets have, it's not quite that tsunami avalanche, but they have so much offensive juice on the roster that even when they're resting players, it still feels like they're capable of that. Because with a lot of teams, you load up with your best lineup and that's when you try to knock out a team. And with the Nuggets, again, because Michael Porter Jr., again, such a strong offensive player as probably their fourth best player, and it's just really tough where when you don't have your top five guys out there, the Nuggets beat you because they can, you know, whether it's resting Jamal Murray or Jokic, again, Michael Porter Jr. can have some extremely efficient nights. When Aaron Gordon, you know, goes off for like 24, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, it's really difficult catching lobs from Jokic, where I talked about on a previous podcast where the Jamal Murray pick and roll to Jokic, and then he can either spray it to the shooters of KCP or Michael Porter Jr., score himself, you know, shoot a signature floater, or hit Aaron Gordon on a perfectly timed cut. It's really difficult to stop this team. And again, like I said, any number of those players can be on or off the court, and they still have like a really strong right hook. It's just really difficult to keep pace with them offensively. So that wraps up kind of my thoughts. Oh, I wanted to talk about one play that really stuck out to me just in terms of kind of the intensity of the series, because the Lakers-Nuggets series I thought was very good just in terms of night in, night out, teams really going for it, and just kind of the excitement factor. But there was a play where Austin Reeves in transition going to the hoop, KCP trying to run him down, and you can tell Austin Reeves has a step, maybe half a step, and he's going to make it to the basket first. KCP knows this, but the Lakers are trying to go on a run late in the game, sometime in the second half. And in the regular season, KCP would probably just decelerate and he would just allow the layup to go uncontested. But it's the playoffs. It's a different animal. And again, it's a close play. It's a step, step and a half. And Austin Reeves knows that he needs to go at the basket hard, hard, accelerating all the way. He's at his top speed. He's trying to go up. And again, instead of laying it up, he's trying to dunk it because he's like, okay, I have a step or a half step. KCP's going to stay in this play. They're trying to prevent a run. He knows there's going to be contact. And he's like, well, I just have to go as hard as I can because I'm for sure going to get fouled. And if I don't, I'm going to dunk it. So, like, we're going to be fine either way. And KCP, again, goes up, a lot of contact. He actually gets his hand on the ball, but, you know, big foul through the body. And it was an excellent demonstration of the difference between the regular season and the playoffs, just in terms of what's at stake. And it was like the what's the LeBron quote? 2 points is not always 2 points, where if the Lakers would have gotten an uncontested dunk there, that really, really would have ratcheted up the momentum that they had. And KCP understands that as a playoff veteran. So you have Austin Reeves going super hard to the basket, understanding what he needs to do, understanding the situation, understanding that there's going to be contact. And then you also have KCP understanding that he needs to, one, max effort this play because it's the playoffs and it's a big spot, and two, the physicality that he needs to bring to this play because neither of these guys are huge guys, right? They're both like shooting guards, but understanding that he needs to send a message of nothing is free here. So ultimately what ends up happening is Reeves goes up really hard for the dunk. KCP comes in with a really hard foul, but not a dirty foul, just a hard foul. Also gets his hand on the ball, prevents the and one, and Austin Reeves ends up shooting free throws. And it was a great play by KCP because it just sort of slowed things down. When there's free throws, there's a natural break in the game, and it just didn't allow the Lakers to kind of get their mojo going. So it was an extremely pivotal play, and it was a great play on both sides, but really KCP, the prevention of kind of the landslide back the other way was huge. But I just found it as, oh, these are, you know, let's set the analytics aside for a second. These are the type of role players. Both Austin Reeves and KCP are probably C plus, B minus players, depending on the season. I think last year I would have said Reeves was a B minus player, had a little bit of a down year this year, more of a C plus guy, but you can't break him. That's one of his greatest strengths. He's a really high confidence player. And what he does is he's a fantastic touch, really good around the basket, really good in the mid range, especially can hit not only the pull up, but like a lot of weird leaning shots that are really, really difficult. And it's really hard to extinguish his confidence even when he's playing well. And then KCP, unbelievable 3-and-D player, really excels in his role, understanding like the tone setting sort of that needs to go on in plays. Basically, the idea is these are really high-end role players because they're both have good basketball IQ and both understand situations and moments and the weight that they have beyond 2 points here, a foul here, a turnover there, whatever it may be. Like there's more value, especially like there's certain situations where you'll see LeBron try to spark things similar, maybe at a higher level, where as soon as there's a loose ball and the Lakers are on defense, boom, he'll pick his spot and he will start sprinting down the court at top speed, using like a noticeable amount of fuel in the tank to get that acceleration going because he sees the opportunity to ignite something. And you'll see the better the player, the more they can identify those situations and the less hesitation they have. And Austin Reeves and KCP are good examples of really, really good role players because, again, they have good skills. That's important. They have good skills. But they also understanding kind of the game within the game and understanding the situations. Again, I think I'll go find the play and tweet it out. But how hard they both go, and you can tell like with their body language, there's an understanding of what's going to happen before it's going to happen. Like before the contact, they know what's going to happen. So that was, I don't know, that was me diving into a play I thought was extremely important in terms of understanding the value of those two players, as well as a really important part in this series where KCP prevented a potential run from happening for the Lakers. Because again, really valuable, especially in the third and fourth quarters. If you can go on runs of, you know, 8-0 runs, whatever it may be, you can shrink a lead or you can grow a lead and kind of put a game out of reach where you don't need to get down to the shot making of the final minute or two. Because like there's a lot of variance and a lot of luck and a lot of, well, he just beat us because he had a crazy shot. And if you can ever prevent that as a team, that's very, very valuable. So that was a huge play in the Nuggets Lakers series. I think that was in game 3. I believe it was in game 3, but Lakers end up losing, gentlemen sweep 4-1. Let's move over to the Eastern Conference. I have much less to say about this because the time zone I live in, I see less of these games. I just got to be upfront with it. But we'll just touch on what's going on in the series. Celtics Heat, Boston's up 3-1. Jimmy Butler's been hurt. This is, you know, you got to commend Boston for even taking a game. That's impressive. Maybe they get another one. The Cavaliers Magic series. All of a sudden, this one's really interesting. Cavs were up 2-0. Basically, my analysis of the series, like the really quick 2-minute analysis was, or 1-minute analysis, both of these are really good defensive teams. The Magic are young. Their offense is not very good. It's Franz and Paolo, and they're both good players, but neither of them are great yet. They've had some really good games late in the series, but I thought Donovan Mitchell would just ultimately be able to dictate things. Now, the Magic, they make it 2-2, and, you know, really pivotal game tonight. Cleveland's able to win a close one. They're up 3-2. I think the general idea still is going to hold throughout the series. I think the Cavs probably take the next one, win 4-2, but this Magic team is very good. They are going to have a really interesting offseason because they have a lot of like NBA talent on their roster, which is important. They're very deep with NBA players, and that's not always the case with rebuilding teams. They have their two building blocks in Franz and Paolo. This could be an offseason where they make a big move. They don't have to, but they could. And that could be very, very exciting for next year to try to speed up that timeline. Because in the content creation business, that's what you live for. The Bucks Pacers. This has been an interesting series, but kind of for like unfortunate reasons. So Indy's up 3-2. Dame and Giannis are out. Giannis hasn't played the entire series. So if the Bucks lose, I guess it would just be putting them out of their misery for a really terrible season. But it's just a shame. Dame's first season there, here is Achilles. And then Giannis obviously has been injured. And, you know, there's a lot to be excited about. Pacers, pretty young, pretty exciting team, but not really the way you want to win your playoff series, but you definitely take it if you're Indy. You're not going to not win the series because you think whatever people are, whatever it is. But I don't know if we learned anything. I think that's like the reason I'm a little bummed about this. If anyone has learned anything from this Bucks-Pacers series, let me know, because that's always valuable. But that's, I think, why we enjoy the playoffs so much. Like, we learn things, or we kind of further cement in ideas where, like, the Pelicans, and yes, granted, like, Zion was hurt. That's a big part of it. But part of the Pelicans is Zion's kind of not always hurt, but throughout his career has missed a lot of time. Whereas, like, I don't think this roster really is what we're looking for. And then you get swept by the Thunder, and I'm like, yeah, I feel pretty strongly about that. It's like the Suns, was this working all year? No. And then the Timberwolves smash them. Also, I feel like we got to give credit to the Timberwolves here. I feel like I have not done that a lot. I was very, very concerned about their offense. I felt similar to, I don't know how to say this. I felt kind of the same as the Magic, where I was like, this is a really good defensive team, both 1 and 2 in luck adjusted defensive rating. And I wasn't sure about the offense because obviously the Timberwolves offense noticeably better. But you have Anthony Edwards, who is looking to be like, I'd say he's like, for me, like prior to this playoffs, I was like, all right, I think I'm ready to put him in the top 20. Like, had a really good season, can score a lot. There's a little bit of playmaking there, but we got to get the efficiency up. We got to get the plus minus up. We got to get overall offensive impact up, but obviously very good player. And then we had Cat, but getting hurt and coming back so close to the playoffs, that really scared me. But it concerned me because I thought they just weren't going to have enough overall offensive firepower. Where Mike Conley, really good player, very old, but still very good. 3-point shooter, passer in terms of skill set, really ideal. And, you know, Jaden McDaniels had a big game. That was good. I think he had like 25 points, something like that. That was good. Rudy Gobert has been, you know, putting in solid numbers. Again, offensively, it's like really where you, like, if you can get 14 points out of him in a playoff series, that's really big, or in a playoff game. And then Nikhil Alexander Walker has been really good. He's been a player. He got moved around in some trades as sort of like kind of some salary filler, and he popped in some of our perimeter defense metrics where when he got traded to Utah, I had to look him up because I didn't know anything about him, and he had been pretty good as a perimeter defender and not much as an offensive guy, and he's worked to become, you know, a viable 3-point shooting threat, has done a good job attacking the rim, has a very analytical based offensive game. I think that's, you know, credit to him, and then credit to the coaching staff of being like, hey, you're a role player. We need to try to like up the efficiency because the defensive tools we like a lot on the perimeter. So he's kind of turned himself into a pretty productive role player, which is pretty cool whenever there's a story like that. They also have Naz Reid, who helps give a little offensive boost off the bench as well. Kyle Anderson gives you some passing and some defense. I know the shooting has been bad. Never been amazing as a scorer, but I know it's really struggled this year. So There are a lot of things to like on this roster. I just was worried about the overall offensive oomph, but the defense has been really, really good. Kind of choked the life out of the Suns at points in the series, so you like that a lot. This Timberwolves-Nuggets series is going to be really fun. I'm really excited to watch this. I think the Nuggets are going to be the winners here, but I think this is, could potentially be the best series in the playoffs in terms of we're going to learn a lot of things. We're going to learn a lot of things about a lot of players in this series. But then, like, other than the finals, this could be the best playoff series. So very, very excited about that. And the last one I don't want to forget the Knicks-Sixers series. So the Knicks are up 3-2. This series has been insane. I have no idea. I have no idea what to say about this. Joel Embiid, at one point, you're like, oh, he looks pretty good. And then he tries to throw an alley-oop to himself. And you're like, oh, this looks really bad. Like, I'm worried about a much larger injury happening. Then he comes back and scores 50 points. Maxey's been really good. Jalen Brunson finally got it going. Josh Hart has been unbelievable at points in the series. There has been, I don't even know where to start. It has been crazy. I don't even know. I don't know. I have my brain. So it takes a while for my brain to process things and come up with an opinion that I feel confident about. And I'm like, okay, it's marinated. This is how we're feeling. This has just been madness. This is what especially early playoffs is all about. Just crazy bare knuckle fight going the distance. I have no idea who's going to win this series. I have no idea what Joel Embiid is going to show up to any game. I don't know if he's going to be pulling people down by the ankles, doing crazy things to Mitchell Robinson. I don't know if anyone saw that or who haven't seen that clip, but falls on the ground. And as Mitchell Robinson jumps, grabs his legs and yanks him down. One of the craziest things I've ever seen a basketball player do. I've never been the biggest Embiid fan. That did not help his case in my book. But yeah, that series has been nuts. So yeah, I think that catches us up on the first round. It has been very fun. And I think those are all of my thoughts. So if you want to talk to me about the playoffs, at Taylor Metrics on Twitter. And we will see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.